Does everybody know what time it is?
Home and podcast time.
That's right. Binford Tools is proud to present a home improvement related interview. My name is Adam. You all know my co-host, Jordan. Today we are with Brett White, reporter, producer at Decider, ex-comic book resources worker, Marvel, yeah. UCB New York, MTV News, and host of the Must Have Seen TV podcast. Thanks so much for joining us, Brett.
Thanks for having me. That is an extensive list that I have in my Twitter bio.
Yeah, it's almost like I pulled that directly from your Twitter bio itself.
The at definitely didn't give it away.
Yeah, I know. I had a lot to remember as I opened. Brett, did we miss anything? Any other roles that we didn't get from the Twitter bio that you've taken part in credential-wise?
Oh, no. I mean, I also run the Bob Newhart style Tumblr at the Natty Newhart, but that is not important.
Why is that not on the bio?
It really should be, right?
Yeah.
Well, thanks so much for joining us today. Yeah, we're excited to talk to you.
Hey, thank you for having me.
All right, great. Jordan, you want to kick things off?
Yeah, so, I mean, we're going to cover, all of the awesome articles that you've written. We're going to ask you just general questions about a show that we all know and love, Home Improvement, and all that stuff. But we do want to start kind of when you were first introduced to Home Improvement. Did you grow up watching it? Do you have any fond early memories of the show that you'd like to share?
Oh, yeah. I mean, I think, I was born in 1984, so I'm Mark's age.
Perfect.
So, yeah. I think it speaks to how huge a hit Home Improvement was that my family watched it from the very beginning. Because I have vivid memories of watching the very first episode when it aired.
Okay.
Which is weird because my parents weren't super into television. So I don't know if ABC's marketing was just on point. And they were like, yep, worked on us. We're going to check this out immediately. But I mean, I watched it and then, you know, it went away, and it wasn't on streaming for a long time. So my memory was, well, I watched it until Mark went goth, but that wasn't the end. And then I remember, I looked at the Wikipedia episode list. I was like, Mark went goth in the penultimate season. Like, I watched the first, was that seven seasons of this show?
Yeah.
every week. So
it hooked you.
Yeah, and it was a thing that me and my family watched every single, Wednesday and then Tuesday. Or was it always on Wednesday?
I don't know. We're a little bit younger. So my memories, I remember watching it live, but not until the later seasons, and I have no
I have no idea what day it was.
It started on Wednesdays, and for some reason I feel like it jumped to Tuesday and was their anchor Tuesday show, but I know from doing my own research for my own podcast, I know that it was on Wednesday for at least the first couple of years.
I think Wednesday sounds right because it came on. There was the Dana Carvey show was being yes. used at before, or Home Improvement was being used as a lead-in to the Dana Carvey show. I don't think that was on Wednesday. So yeah, that's
yeah. And I remember watching. Right. I remember trying to watch the Dana Carvey show in elementary school and being like, I don't understand what this is. This isn't a sitcom.
Yeah. I think a lot of people felt that way. Yeah.
Yeah, that's why it didn't last.
Right.
But when I went back and rewatched it, I think that of every show that exists, I think Home Improvement looks the most like my childhood. I think it's because I am Mark's age, and so I grew up literally alongside him, and so that's what that's what my house looked like, that's what all my friends' house looked like, that's what all of our moms looked like, Jill. So it really does resonate with me just because of that.
And then when Mark went goth, that's you were out on that because that did not look like your life anymore.
And now at that point, I was super into Oasis, so I was very Britpop. I was wearing a bunch of Adidas shell tops and circle John Lennon glasses.
Okay, so next question. This is a pretty substantial question, maybe sort of complicated, but I want to ask it second, not first. So a lot of pieces written on Home Improvement. Within the last, I would say, decade or so, have been mostly negative. A lot of people cite that the show hasn't aged well with regards to gender roles or masculinity. Some of it is justified, some of it maybe less so. You seem to argue the opposite, or at least be more aligned with the show than a lot of culture writers right now. why do you think Home Improvement isn't remembered more fondly? What misconceptions do you think kind of exist about the show?
I think that, I mean, for one thing, like, Tim Allen doesn't do it any favors. I think that what people think Home Improvement is actually what Last Man Standing is.
Okay, yeah.
But again, I've never watched Last Man Standing, so I might also have a wrong assumption of what that show is.
Yeah, we haven't watched an episode either. Never seen it before,
yeah. We are not the experts on that one. So.
Yeah, no. But I think that, because I did the same thing, like for the, I don't know, 15 years that it was not readily available, I also filed it away in my memory as thinking that it was probably like, probably super regressive and misogynist and like testosterone-y, et cetera. But then like rewatching it on Hulu, like I did in a month or whatever, it totally changed my mind. And I think that a lot of people that are holding onto those older notions of it are just holding on to what they remember from when they were very, very young. And things change when you watch them as an adult, and you can, like, know what they're standing in contrast to. Like, as a kid, I had no idea that there were so many women that wrote for the show. Right. But then for, like, the Jill Taylor article I wrote, I counted, like, in a good, like, third to, I don't know, 40% of the episodes were written by women, which is not even the case nowadays.
Right.
So the fact that Home Improvement was that far, far ahead of the curve so long ago, it's a thing you don't remember, a thing you wouldn't know unless you actually like go to IMDb and look at all the credits, like I tend to do sometimes. But I think like it just rewatching it is what made me reconsider like everything I thought I knew about it.
Yeah, I don't think we would have reconsidered anything unless we decided to do this podcast and are, you know, doing a much slower version of what you did on the Hulu binge. But we talk about that, how there's just some things we don't remember, and, you know, the way they portray certain things. Like, we do remember Tim being kind of silly and misogynist in certain situations, but he's mostly made to look like an idiot by the end of the episode
they kind of always categorize him as the dumbest person on the show, and we align with the other characters. You mentioned previously the Jill Taylor as the greatest sitcom mom article. Could you talk a little bit about, I mean, I guess you sort of just did, but maybe you could give us a little more insight on just the impetus of that article?
Yeah, I've always really loved Jill. I think it's because, like, when I was a little kid, I do remember, you know, being over at our family friend's house and hearing like a conversation between my mom and like her, you know, my mom and her friends would get together and like decorate sweatshirts in like the basement, you know, like puff paint parties and stuff, very early 90s. And I remember all of them talking about how much they loved Jill. And the first thing that like stuck with me, because I never really heard my mom talk about a TV character before, but the fact that all these women were like, you know, Jill looks like us, like she's not supermodel thin, but she's also not like, you know, funny, like overweight. Like she looks very like a mom, but also like kind of a cool mom, but very much still like a mom. Like she had that weird like muffin top hair in like the first couple seasons.
Season two is brutal.
Yeah. And so I always like gravitated towards her, and then like rewatching it, I just think Patricia Richardson, I'm so angry that Helen Hunt beat her out at the Emmys every year, because she should have won like so many Emmys. She's so good. Like she's one of the few characters that you see actually like laughing when things are funny on the show. Like she laughs at jokes that Tim makes. Like he doesn't make them in a vacuum. She reacts to them, and then she still gets her line out. But you know, that wasn't written in the script. It wasn't like Jill laughs and then says this. Like that's Patricia Richardson living in the moment. And I love that she seems so, you know, amused and annoyed with her kids and her husband. And it makes that character so much richer than just like the Carol Bradys of the world.
Yeah. And you get the idea that like it was kind of like a family on the set, which made it probably pretty easy to act that way towards those kids and towards Tim and stuff, that they had a real bond. Because I mean, when we talk to Richard Karn, when you see stuff on Twitter, like it just seems like, you know, he always says that like we're still in touch, you know, we still talk and stuff like that. Maybe with the exception of JTT towards the end, but yeah, that might have made it easier. Kind of moving on from that, in talking about all the characters, talking about Jill, talking about how Tim acts, is there a character, you know, when you were younger, you said you grew up with Mark. Did you really identify with him up until the goth stage?
No. I want to find the weirdos that identify with like early season Mark. Like he's not a character.
No, he's not a character.
I mean, he's also like so young, so of course he's not like. I mean, I was obviously like Randy. I think every kid, at least me, like obviously I loved. You know, I'm a Han Solo Gambit like you know kind of kid, mm-hmm. so I like the snarky smartass character. And you know, JTT like. He stole that show from the very beginning. I mean, he was old enough to actually know how to be funny in those, like, season one and two.
Yeah, and he just seemed right away to have a little bit more acting chops than even, you know, Brad. And I guess, wasn't he older than Brad?
Yeah, he's like he's maybe a couple months older than Brad. So,
okay, so not
yeah,
a lot
but
older,
he just looks significantly younger.
Right. Yeah. I think Adam one time said I was more like Mark, and I definitely take offense to that.
I say that all the time because I feel it.
That's how you start most of our episodes, so it really brings me down a peg.
Yeah, so kind of related to identifying it with specific characters, do you have maybe specific episodes that you would cite as some of your... First, we'll start with your favorites, if you have any favorites that stand out, and then maybe we can talk about least favorites, because there's a lot of stinkers in the 200-plus odd episodes.
Yeah, I think my favorite episode is probably The Haunting of Taylor House, the season two, because I love Halloween, so I love Halloween episodes, and Home Improvement always did really good ones, and I think that's the season two one, I do believe.
Yeah, it's either two or three.
Right.
Yeah, it's pretty early, and that's the episode that we covered on my podcast, because I did like 3 months of holiday episodes, Halloween, Thanksgiving, Christmas, and I chose that one.
Is that the one with Sean Hunter in it?
Yeah. And I think it's also because that's the one I rewatched the most, because for like the past like 5 years, even when like I've owned that in iTunes for a while, because I was like, well, I need to watch this, it's Halloween. And I just think that's just like such a fun episode. Yeah. I love... Because that's the one that has that annoying character that they tried to make him happen. He's in like three episodes.
There's a lot of Curtis. Like, you know, they have Karen Curtis. They have Marie. They have a lot of these tertiary characters that come
in.
Yeah,
I like all of Jill's friends.
Yeah, they're not bad. But Curtis, that was never going to go. There's enough kids on that show.
But I love like, and also Jill gets a really good physical comedy because she's wearing that carrot outfit.
Yeah.
And there's that one shot of her, like, she has to go to the bathroom, and so, like, but Curtis is ahead of her, so it's like you see her run, and then you see Curtis get, like, shoved back.
Yeah, there was a real Jill-Curtis rivalry brewing for a while. Yeah. It never got resolved.
Yeah, this mature woman who's going to be a therapist, like, school, is coming home and, like, snarking on this kid. It's pretty... He was a little stinker, though. He deserved it.
Yeah, he was.
I also like anything that has to do with Tim and Al's, like, relationship. I really like the episode where they... What I guess is the chicken pox up. There's something makes Tim have to move in with Al, and I guess it's because he doesn't have chicken pox.
Yeah, I remember that one definitely.
Yeah, he didn't have him when he was younger, so he had to leave the house.
Mm-hmm. And he goes there, and Al is just like he's got everything planned, like board games and like watching all of his home movies, and it's like he's such an open book with Tim, and it's so like sweet. And I really appreciate that.
he just wants a friend. That's all. Yeah.
And I guess there's also the earlier, like, season two or three episode. Well, because when I did my rewatch, I did a thing called... So search on Twitter, hashtag OwlWatch.
Okay.
Because I went through and I tracked Al's journey from being a, like, basically a fill-in, like a placeholder for Stephen Tobolowsky to come on.
Yeah.
Which I think is, like, fascinating that they, like,
It would have been a very different show.
Yeah, not as good. Stephen Tobolowsky's great, but Al. And so I tracked, like, when he first had lines, when he first got a plot, like, when he was first brought, you know, into the Taylor house. And it's, like, end of season one, they finally give him, like, the A story. And it's like, oh, this is the, like, journey complete, you know? And then season three or whatever, he gets into opening credits. And, so I like
season two, they really don't know what to do with him. Depending on the episode, his emotions and, like, his character traits will change just... at the drop of a hat to kind of service whatever plot they need. It's very bizarre when you go back and watch the show because you think of him as being such a kind of defined character, but it took a while.
Yeah, he's a lot more like kind of like stoic and silent like up top.
Yeah.
Because he's just in the tool time segment, so he's very like, you know, he's very, I don't think so, Tim.
Right.
But then when he first goes over to their house, it's like that, it's a hot rod party, and Jill's also had people over.
Oh, he wears the 10-gallon hat.
And he comes from like the 10-gallon hat.
Yeah.
And it's just like, oh, it's such a sweet character moment. Yeah. So anything with like Tim and Al, I love.
Definitely. definitely.
What about your least favorite? Is there any like real terrible episodes that stick out to you? I mean, I'm guessing not a ton because those are the ones we don't dwell on very much.
No, yeah, I think the show definitely loses its way. Like in a lot, in most shows, like the last season or so.
Yeah,
yeah.
But I think like it kept the quality, consistent quality up for, you know, a good 5 or 6 seasons.
Right.
I think like once it's like once Randy is gone,
yeah,
and they have to like first of all like justify their kid moving away, and then like justify like them being okay with that, and then like having holidays without him, although he does come back for the last Christmas episode or last Thanksgiving episode.
Yeah,
yeah. It gets a little bit like nothing really stands out.
Mm-hmm. It just loses its kind of flair towards the end.
Yeah, there. But I was like definitely just like trying to like trudge through those last couple, like that last season, really.
That gives us something to look forward to.
In 3 years, I'll look forward to watching the inferior quality.
Yeah.
You know, we talk a lot on the show. We even wrote like a reboot script. But what would you like to see out of a Home Improvement reboot if that were to happen? And, you know, odds are Last Man Standing will happen before that. But if there were to be a Home Improvement reboot, what would you want out of that, or what would you expect? You know,
I've already, because after I finished it, I started rolling this around in my head like a couple months ago. And I think like I settled on, well, the series finale is kind of up in the air. I would still want them to be in the same house, obviously, because it's one of the best TV houses ever,
I
would say.
It really is. Yeah.
The set is constructed in such an interesting, like, I think it's built on an angle because the fact that they can get so deep into it is so weird to me.
Yeah.
It's not like a normal, like, square. But anyway, they should still be in that house. I feel like Al should move in next door to where Wilson is. So, like, Al is now the guy that he can go to since Wilson is no longer with us. I think that also brings Al in. I feel like they should also be... My idea was, like, they'd be retired, but they would have, like, a YouTube show. And so, like, there would be, like, a home...
That's hilarious because that's exactly what I did when I wrote the script.
It was a
web series that brought Tim back to prominence.
Yeah. Because I think that's probably what he would be doing now. And I also had the idea that Randy should be working in like local Detroit politics. Like he should be a campaign manager.
I like that.
For, you know, like the governor, like someone running for office. Because like that, and like Mark should be in film. Because that was what he, you know, liked doing.
Did you read this reboot? It sounds Yeah.
And I think I said like Brad should be like the high school like football coach
something. I said he was a high school math teacher. So apparently we're very aligned on what we want, or maybe it's just so telegraphed. But yeah, that sounds good.
Yeah.
I wanted to return to another one of the articles that you wrote. You wrote the article Al Borland should be considered a gay icon. Could you kind of talk about the impetus of that or where that came from?
Oh, geez. That's like, it's my beat, basically, at work. I write a lot about gay stuff. As a gay man, I can do that. I have a series called That Gay Episode where I like go back and look at gay episodes of sitcoms and like analyze them from like, so I've done like Cheers, Blossom, Home Improvement never had one. So, but like rewatching it, like, first of all, like, Richard Karn is a handsome man, especially if you are gay men that are into other certain types of men. Richard Karn is very dreamy. But then also, like, the overriding thing of, like, the way that he presents masculinity is so, like, good and so healthy and so well-rounded that I myself, like, I see myself in that. Like, I look up to that kind. I think I wrote in the article that like gay men, when you come out of the closet, you have to reconstruct your own like self-image of, oh, but like society says gay men have to be like this way, but I've never been like that. Do I now have to like musicals all of us? Like there's you really start scrutinizing the way that you present yourself, the way you walk through the world, the way you deal with, man, it becomes a very fraught thing. But then having someone like Al, who is unquestionably like, you know, he's a straight man. He's unquestionably like loves tools, likes sports, really handy. But also the fact that he's like in touch with his feelings, loves accordions, like he shows that being masculine isn't limiting. Like it's a facet of his personality. And I think that especially like younger gay men who come out and maybe don't identify as being more femme, should look to him as like a role model of like, no, you can still like this and like this, and it can all be the same. And also, like, you're still gonna have friends, people are still gonna respect you, you're still gonna have a good job. And yeah, so I like wrote a long piece, and then Richard Karn retweeted it because I was very nervous.
Yeah,
I get very nervous when I write anything. But both Patricia Richardson and Richard Karn like reached out, like were very, very complimentary. Like Patricia Richardson was very touched and then tweeted at me like a lot about Home Improvement, and I was like, this is amazing.
We've had absolutely no luck with Patricia Richardson getting her on the show. So
yeah. I tried. I was like, hey, if you want to do an interview, I am all for it.
She didn't respond to that. She doesn't seem to want to do an interview. I mean, I don't know. We've been begging for a couple of years. Richard Karn was less difficult, but yeah, it's
maybe we're coming off desperate.
Yeah. I mean, definitely, but that's literally all we have.
But it's like one of my friends in LA is like friends with like Richard Karn's daughter or something, and like so like I'm like three people removed from him, and they were like, he's the nicest guy, we will make sure he reads this. And I was like, I hope he likes it.
Yeah. Now I think he does seem very, very genuine and nice.
He loves his fans. He's always RTing them fans on Twitter.
Yeah.
He sure does. Related, again, I guess we'll discuss the third article, because you just kind of mentioned masculinity as it relates to the Karnman. Can you talk about the impetus of the toxic masculinity article, or maybe how Home Improvement is remembered as a show with toxic masculinity, and how maybe it actually isn't?
Yeah, like all three of these were things that I like rewatching Homer. I consider them now my like trilogy of Home Improvement pieces. Like this is like I've now like said my piece on it, because when I rewatched like all 200 episodes in a month, these are like the three things that like struck out to me the most. And I just had this Tim Allen one, or this masculinity article, like in my back pocket for a couple months, because I finished watching it in January. Right. And you know, when it's like a slower week at work, I have like pitches that I save to like drop out when I need something. And I didn't have a reason to really write it for a while, but then the Roseanne reboot happened, and I saw in a number of like ratings reports after like Roseanne's return dominated ratings, all like Deadline and Hollywood Reporter are like, ABC will probably start looking to their other blue collar comedies to resurrect, like Home Improvement. And that was like, I have very complicated feelings about the Roseanne reboot.
Right.
And so I was like wanting to get ahead of it and be like, okay, well, you guys rebooted Roseanne in the wrong way, where you totally forgot that she spent 7 years talking about not beating her children because she's an abused person, but now all of a sudden she's into it. I was like, we need to remember that Home Improvement was never the show that everyone remembers it being. Every episode has Tim being super macho and thinking that's the way to win every problem, but then Wilson, Al, and Jill always like talk him down and be like, hey, open your mind, and then like a good person, he does.
Yeah.
And then he changes.
Yeah.
And if it was going to get rebooted, I think an episode would be like Tim wants to vote for Trump, and then Jill's like, hell no, and Wilson talks sense into him, and then he's like, oh, okay, and then maybe he votes for Gary Johnson, like, and then maybe he votes, or maybe he forgets to vote. But I think like that is the plot of a Home Improvement episode. A plot of a Home Improvement episode is him having a very narrow-minded idea of what a thing should be, and then people like really making him open up about things. I mean, I think Tim Taylor is an amazing character for that reason.
Right.
He's a very relevant character for our times now, because he's the kind of guy that is seemingly closed off, thinks he's very closed off, but is oddly like super open to new ideas. And maybe he doesn't get them right. Like maybe he doesn't remember all the like philosophers' names exactly, but he's open. And that's such a cool thing. So if we reboot it, it needs to be like that way.
Yeah,
or just reboot Last Man Standing. Like that's what those fans really want. So
Last Man Standing, based on what I know, seems to be a lot closer to Roseanne than Home Improvement. And Roseanne share very few similarities, other than the fact that they were both on the same network in roughly the same era. So people would be very disappointed. Yeah, it would be very disappointed with the reboot.
Yeah, so kind of moving away from Home Improvement, unless there's anything else you want to say about it. But we were going to kind of move on to some of your, you know, you've written pop culture articles on everything from Avengers to the sexiest sitcom dads.
Yeah,
you know,
it's all over the place.
We've got everything. So you've got a varied interest, but it's usually pop culture related. We're just curious, you know, when did your interest in popular culture begin? Was it something just always since you were younger? Or?
Yeah, I mean, like, that's... I feel like I grew up at the best time. When you grow, like, being born in 84, so, you know, there's cable, and, like, you're growing up, and you, I feel like I was exposed to really great new shows, like, you know, heyday of TGIF, must-see TV, mm-hmm. you know, all that stuff, but then also reruns were a thing, and so I got to have this crash course as a child on Nick at Night and TV Land and everything else of seeing shows from the 50s to, you know, the 80s, That kids nowadays don't get like that. That's what I get worried about. But there's a, I feel like people of like my generation, like we grew up with an awareness of context. Like all these shows are really good about, all these networks are really good about kind of like teaching you like Lucy came first and then we had Dick Van Dyke Show. Like they're really good about that. Where now everything exists totally removed from a context on streaming services. Hard to track down. It's all just kind of like there's so much new stuff, so much old stuff, it's hard to know. I grew up in a curated era where I got to like learn about all this stuff, and it's never gone away. I also, you know, I didn't have any friends until high school, so
maybe it wasn't your choice.
Yeah. So it's like, well, what else are we gonna do on a Saturday other than like watch Mystery Science Theater 3000 twice in a row?
When did you start writing? Did your writing kind of take the shape of pop culture kind of critique analysis sort of work?
In 2008, I got a job with Wizard Magazine, the comic book magazine. I worked in their conventions department, and that eventually, like, I started writing for the magazine about comic book stuff, and then, like, all my connections through there. Because, basically, I know people that work at Marvel Comics, DC Comics, mm-hmm. Dark Horse Comics, like, everywhere, because it's like a fraternity that I'm in of all these people that worked for Wizard Magazine at one point. And having all those connections, I immediately started working in like comic book journalism from like 2011 until last year.
Okay.
Which is so niche and pays proportionally to what you would consider. And then I started at Decider a year ago. Okay. So I've been doing this for, I don't know. I mean, I guess 10 years, because I started at Wizard 10 years ago. Right. But it's been like a full-time thing since like 2013 or so. Yeah, 2013.
Awesome. Oh. Yeah, so kind of on the same note, I read an article that you had written about Harry. Well, it was in relation to Harry Anderson passing away, and you had mentioned that Harry Anderson should be in the Sitcom Hall of Fame. So I kind of wanted to put a spin on that and ask you who you would put on your sitcom Mount Rushmore. So
yeah, this is actually
who belongs up there?
This is a thing that I should probably commission an artist to draw. Like, I should have a poster of this. No, but mine would be Bob Newhart, Mary Tyler Moore, Betty White, and John Astin.
Okay.
Four.
This is going to make me sound... I know who John Astin is, but for what particular... What was the John Astin role that...
I mean, like, Gomez Adams is my absolute favorite. But as a crazy person, I do this thing when I'm bored on weekends and I go through actors' IMDb pages and just watch all their guest spots. Mm-hmm. And John Astin, I mean, after Adam's Family, he didn't really have regular roles. He just did guest spots. And so he guested on every sitcom. Every time he comes in on an episode, he is the... an amazing guest star. He's usually funnier than the regular cast. He's so committed. He can do everything. And I really respect that. And then obviously,
my memory
like,
of John Astin is this, and you've probably seen it, is the Mr. Boogity Disney movie. Did you ever run across
that? No, I know it exists because I have seen that. Okay. He's, in my searches for things. I need to get into his movie career, definitely.
Yeah, it's it's a fun watch. Would I say it's quality? Probably not. much of this stuff isn't. You had mentioned Bob Newhart, and I see, and I obviously I've been on your Twitter. You know that from the
start.
Yeah,
we started with that.
I see that you have a photo taken with Bob Newhart. So if he's on your sitcom Mount Rushmore, that must be something that was meaningful to you. Talk about that, maybe.
That was a, like, one of the first things I wrote last year was for Decider was a, hey millennials, this is why you should care about Bob Newhart. Mm-hmm. And so I just like wrote a piece about like why, like, you know, how influential he was and how like awesome he is and how much I love him. And then like a month later, his secretary emailed me on behalf of him to thank me for writing it. And she was like, and Bob said it's like the best thing he's read about the Bob Newhart show. And he's so happy it's finally getting the recognition he thought it deserved. Right. And that was one of the best days of my life when I got an email from Bob Newhart. Yeah. But then I saw he was doing a stand-up show in St. Charles, Missouri, which is where my husband is from. So it's where all my in-laws are in October. And so I emailed his secretary and was like, hey, I might be going to this show. Would it be possible to like say hello or like get an interview? Was like what I like disguised it as.
Right.
Yeah. And I was like, under the auspices of being professional. But they were like, no, we'll put you on a list. You can come back and say hi. And so I like flew to St. Charles for a weekend for just that one thing. And it was amazing. He's still hilarious. I got to meet him backstage. And it was the most starstruck I've ever been in my life.
Yeah,
and I've met plenty of like famous-y people doing the job I do, but this one was the biggest.
Right. Yeah. There's that Twitter thread right now where everybody's talking about a mundane encounter with a celebrity, but this would have been the exact opposite of that. I take it.
I think mine is probably like I walked past. I sat next to Jake Gyllenhaal on a subway once. Like.
Okay. Yeah.
that's my mundane.
That's mundane. That's mundane. Yeah. Yeah. I've enjoyed reading those threads, but. Yeah, sounds good. Jordan, anything else?
No, I mean, we want to give you opportunity to plug anything that you want. You know, you mentioned your podcast. We mentioned Decider.
Yeah.
Is there any articles that... you said you're done doing the... not done necessarily, but you did your trilogy. So I don't expect any home improvement related ones right
now. Well, but also, who knows? Like, George Lucas came back for more. So
yeah.
No, I think, my podcast is like probably the most relevant to your listening audience because we did the Haunting of Taylor House last October,
okay.
Which I had a lot of fun doing. More recent ones, I just actually talked about Mary, which is Mary Tyler Moore's 1985 sitcom that only lasted 13 episodes.
Mm.
And it stars Mary Tyler Moore and John Astin, which is why and also Katie Sagal, like pre-Peg Bundy.
Okay.
It's a really stacked cast, and it's a really good show, but it was just like buried on CBS in the mid-80s, and it did not last. Have an episode of The Simpsons that I was editing today that'll go up soon. But yeah, it's a lot of fun. It's any sitcom episode from the 20th century. Every week, a different show and a different specific episode.
Did you mention the name of the podcast?
Oh yeah, Must Have Seen TV.
Must have seen TV. So, All right.
Past, you know, in the past. get it? It's like must, but it's in the past. Oh,
it's a great name. Yeah, I mean, with podcasts, it's all about the name. So yeah, with a name like hard. That, I'm sure you're tops of iTunes. Yeah.
Please. Rate review.
Like rate review. That's how we end every episode. So.
Begging every week for reviews.
Yeah. And then I'm trying to think if I had any other articles that were really good. I mean, I wrote one that I think is very interesting about on Step by Step, the Garfield sex scene, which I stumbled across because I'm also watching Step by Step, which is a mistake. No one should ever do that.
Step by Step. I haven't watched it in a long time.
Yeah, I have very fuzzy memories.
Pinchot came in and kind of ruined it, I felt.
Yeah, there's an episode in like season 5 or 6 where basically Frank puts on a Garfield mask for him and Suzanne Summers to then have sex.
Oh my.
And that's how the episode ends, and it's very disturbing. And so I wrote an article about that.
Yeah. So. We'll tweet that one.
Yeah, we'll make sure to link that.
Yeah.
I might pin that as well. Yeah,
that's a good one right there. That's quality work I do.
Of Step by Step, are there probably a lot more than I think?
It was on for 7 seasons.
Too long.
Way too long, and it is worse than anyone remembers. It is.
Oh man.
Horrible.
Yeah, I know. Right. I know. Cody had some issues off the show that maybe led to his early exit. But I wasn't as into the show after he left. But
no. Ugh.
Oh man. Okay. Any final kind of thoughts on Home Improvement? Any other parting words about the show that you'd like to get out there while you have the opportunity to do so? Because odds are every day you don't get asked about Home Improvement. So you know, I want you to leave it out on the table here.
For the month that I was rewatching it, I was all I talked about.
You probably get asked about it more than we do, in fact.
If Funko wants to make some Funko Pops,
You'd buy a Mark Funko Pop.
Yeah, I would love a goth sure Mark Funko scale. Pop.
Yeah.
Yeah. Give me a nice Heidi one. That'd be fun.
Yeah,
Al's the only one I want.
I got it.
I'm looking at my Golden Girls ones right now, and I'm like, they are lonely. They need more.
Yeah, iconic sitcom characters. Well, hey, thanks so much for joining us, Brett. And it's been a real pleasure. We don't get to talk to a lot of knowledgeable fans of Home Improvement, and looking forward to having this out there.
Thank you so much for having me.
All right, take care.
Yeah, thank you.